A recent AARP survey found 84% of baby boomers want to remain in their homes and communities when they retire. But many homes may not be designed to accommodate our needs as we age. Architect Deborah Pierce has written a new book, The Accessible Home, that highlights how universal design techniques can benefit everyone regardless of age or ability. Deborah Pierce joins us this morning from our studios at WGBH in Boston. Good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us in our studios in Woods Hole, Roe Osborne, building trade specialist, author, and architectural photographer. Good morning, Roe.
Hi, Mindy.
All right, Deborah, you have been an architect for a number of years. What made you decide to write a book about accessible or inclusive design?
Well, that's a great question. I'd say that I was working with a client who needed an accessible home for a child with cerebral palsy, and I realized that everything that I had done in decades of work for public buildings and accessibility projects for city halls and libraries and courthouses really didn't prepare me for how I needed to work with this family. And the books that I wanted to have accessible to us were not available. They hadn't been written yet. I wanted to have an image library to share with my client about how things might be in this house. And much of the accessible environment was really in the commercial and public sphere and not in the residential. At around the same time, I was in a national committee for the American Institute of Architects, and I saw that my profession was not really addressing the things that I was thinking about. And so it was really inspired by wanting to bring these resources available to homeowners, but also wanting to kind of shake my profession and say, hey, guys, I think we can do a little more here.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when you look through this book at the photos and the different houses that you highlight, when you think of accessible, you think of, you know, ramps and rails. And these houses are really very beautiful. And there's a lot of options out there that I think a lot of people don't know about. And you're right. People want to see photos. We want to see, well, what might this look like?
Right. Right. I wanted this to be a book that was full of engaging stories and inspiring photographs.
Let's talk about the principles of universal design, because many of the features you talk about in your book enhance living spaces for everyone, not just older or disabled individuals.
Right, exactly. Well, the principles of universal design mean basically design for everyone, everywhere. And so that there are seven principles, but they have to do with material being easy to read, with things being easy to use and intuitive. And I think that those principles are wonderful, and they're also a little bit perhaps vague. And I think that looking at accessibility and the ways that real people have, say, for example, created a kitchen that is easy to use, it puts a window and a focus on universal design, I think, in a way that's very useful. So what does it mean that it's easy to use? Well, for a person who, say, can't use their hands, or for a person who may have some trouble with their vision or maybe some hearing loss, what does that mean? And when we look at the answers to those questions, we see that it's about sight lines and materials that have a visual contrast so that it's easy to see what one has. And when you put those features together, you come up with something that's really beautiful. Mm. But in looking at it and seeing it as a beautiful kitchen, it's misleading to think that this is all about aesthetics. It's really about understanding that when people are have some kind of a disability, mild or major of any sort, and who doesn't at some point or other,
right,
that there are ways that we can create an environment that really responds to those disabilities and makes it much easier to use. Just take, for example, doorknobs. You know, if you have a dislocated shoulder or broken wrist, as I have, the usual turning knob doesn't really work. You need to have a lever or perhaps a sliding door or something that's a little different.
Deb, I loved your book, by the way, but I was struck with how to make this design translatable to the builders who are actually doing it, because I, you know, obviously there are many, many beautiful homes, and there's many beautiful concepts in there. What do you do, or how do you approach it to make these designs more builder friendly?
That's a great question. I'd like to turn it back to you. Actually, I think that I think there are many ways of looking at the book. One is just it's a lot of good ideas. You can go through the book and you can say, "Hey, that's an interesting way to conceal the pipes underneath the sink in a bathroom." So you can use it that way as just a kind of a checklist, and you can also I think the book is also just a kind of stepping back and looking at the home in an overview. It's not really enough to have the right gadgets to make it accessible. It's really how do those places, those gadgets, and those spaces fit together? And there's a chapter on living spaces and on getting around in the house that I think really changes the paradigm of what a house is. Not a series of rooms along a corridor, for example, but every time you can really look at how a person does a sequence of activities, it may mean that you don't have walls or that you don't have doors or that you really look at space a little bit differently. So I'm hoping that some of that comes out too. Some of that would be those kinds of features or that kind of thinking is helpful for new houses, whereas maybe the gadgets and the small interventions are something that people can also use in a renovation.
Well, even in the small houses, and Roy, you know this, we've got a lot of these small capes, and people are going more for the open space, that airy, open, and taking down walls as they're renovating
right.
some of their homes now.
Yeah, and I find that in talking to local builders, a lot of it is just figuring out the structure of the house and how to support a wall or take out a wall that might be structural and be able to open up the spaces.
Exactly. Our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. If you'd like to join our conversation, you have a question, our email is thepoint@wgbh.org. And Ro, talk about, there was one of a term in the book that you thought was interesting. Was it visitability?
Yes. And I thought, as I was reading, I said, not to be confused with visibility. This is visitability.
Right.
And I had actually never seen that term before. Can you talk a little bit about that, Deb?
Yeah. Eleanor Smith is a person in a wheelchair in Atlanta, and she was wheeling around her neighborhood, and there was a new subdivision going up, and she noticed that that all these houses had stairs, and she said to the developers, gee, these are going to be my neighbors. You mean I'm not going to be able to visit them? And so she was able to get the city of Atlanta to pass a regulation that says that all new houses have to be visitable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a movement that's really been picked up in many cities and towns and even with funding for affordable housing, that the idea is the entrance is accessible, that a person can visit, that they can come in, they can use the bathroom, they can go to wherever, to some space, some activity space on the first floor, so maybe it's a living room, and then they can get out. And I think it's just a really wonderful way to think about it.
Yeah. But it's not necessarily the entire house set up for...
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, just what a guest would want to... need to use.
Right. Now, of course, many of us are in denial about aging. We think, we're going to put that off as long as we can.
It's not going to happen to us.
Yeah, we're fit, we're healthy. Aging isn't going to be a problem for us. And the truth
right.
is we can work to stay healthy and fit, but the impacts of aging are a little bit beyond our control. And disabilities can strike anyone at any time. And it's interesting that this book comes across our desk at this time because I have a house that is not very accessible. I have a lot of little stairs. When you come in, the very first thing, you go up a few stairs. And my mother-in-law has always been saying, can't you put a railing here? Because, there's no, it's a very wide open, but there is no railing. I thought, wow, I hadn't even thought about that. And I have an elderly aunt who there's no way she would only be able to go on that very first floor because there's, it's just not very accessible. So there's a lot of things we should be thinking about now before we get into that situation where we can't get around our own homes.
Right. If you're doing a renovation, if your kitchen is getting shabby and you're doing it over, or your bathroom sink has a crack in it, just anything that you're doing in your house is a chance to really make incremental gains in terms of the space being better for you over the long run.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me in the you have a bunch of case studies in the back of the book, and there's a whole section on multi-floor accessibility, and elevators. We go elevator in a home, but they are such a smart idea.
Right. I want to say the elevators. Looking at them, there are some really cool ideas with these. They don't always look like what you would expect an elevator to look like. It's almost like there's one.
Well,
there's like the tile that's on the floor matches the tile in the elevator. There's a little chair there. It almost looks like a little sitting room by itself.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can.
Well, there's a lot of creativity that can go into any of these, and that's really one of the things that I hope people will get in seeing this. You know, we don't have to say because an elevator has been like this in the past that that's how it has to be in the future, or because a bathroom has been a certain way that that's what it has to be. I'd really like people reading this to say, aha, this could be a little different.
Yeah. And the cost of elevators is not as much as people may think. I mean, there certainly are costly ones, but they're more affordable than you might think.
Well, there are also lifts, platform lifts, and if the vertical height is less than 12 feet, you can go with a platform lift in most places. It's always important to see what the codes are in the area that you're working, you're building, but that's something to check out in many of these. Lifts in the book are actually platform lifts that are just put into a shaft, and they're allowed to have windows and glass and a short distance. And as you say, just by how you furnish it and how you finish it off, the floor, the wall materials, the light fixtures inside, it can very much be just another room rather than something institutional.
Yeah, there was one particular design where the elevator actually went in the middle of the staircase. The staircase wrapped around the elevator, and the elevator I think was pretty much open or glassed in. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea.
Well, as we mentioned at the top of the show, surveys show that people want to stay at home as they age and not go into assisted living facilities. So design of living spaces is key to that. Before we talk about some more specifics of home design, there are some innovative ways to assist seniors aging in place. And Deb, you talk about these in your book. Maybe you want to mention some of that here. Like taking on boarders, the co-housing communities, villages, assisted living for RVers. Who knew?
Well, that's not. Perhaps that would be the next book to talk about all of these other alternatives.
Yeah.
There are some. There's a couple of great ideas in the book that I think are worth thinking about. There's a family in California who purchased four houses on one street, and they all move there. So there's one man who's had a traumatic brain injury and spinal cord injury from a car crash many years ago, and he's living in one of the houses, and his brother lives next door, and his sister lives across the street. There's a house that they're renting down the street so that they've got some income for the family. And there's an empty lot in terms of one of the houses is on a specially large lot so that can be carved off and made another house for the aging parents. And so it's really a vision of how a community can work to be more user-friendly for people with all kinds of conditions.
Right. And, of course, there are, we know many people who retire here to the Cape and Islands, and some, of course, are fortunate enough to build a new home, and they can make the Universal Designs part of that plan. But, of course, we also have people retiring to older homes here that may not have these universal or inclusive design features. So when you're looking to make your home more accessible, you recommend first taking stock of how you use these different living spaces. So basically going around and figuring out what it is you want to do, right?
Right, yes. I think you can also substitute the term personalized. So accessibility is really a personalized home. And I think that's what makes some of all of these images and the case studies in the book so very appealing, because they really are geared to the lifestyle of the people who are living there, whether they do entertaining or whether they're artists or they work in the wood shop. Accessibility is not just about removing barriers. It's about making places that are really wonderful to be in and that suit the requirements of the people that are using them.
Mm-hmm. I was struck with a lot of what's done in catering to the the person's individual size as well. I mean, if you are able to reach up 3 feet, or if you're able to reach up only 2 feet, or you know, you design the facilities within the home, you know, to cater to a person's, really customize them to the person's individual limitations, physical limitations.
Right. You think about a kitchen also, if it's used by a couple, how often are the both members of the couple the same height?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you think of like, I'm thinking of some, you know, I'm rather tall, and I have some friends who are, you know, like, can you get that bowl that's up there on that top shelf that I can't reach? You know?
Yeah.
I always tell people I'm going to be tall in my next life.
Yeah, and it's really interesting what you can do in kitchens nowadays. And so I guess that's a big one, too, is, you know, how do you both cook? What do you do in the kitchen? You know, what are your needs there? You know, and it was interesting, too, with the doors. So, you know, should the doors open in or out? There's, you know, a lot of little things that can really make a big difference.
Yes, my hope is that people looking at this will just get a zillion ideas that they can pick and choose from to at least incrementally make their homes work better for them.
Right. Go ahead,
I had a quick question. I have a barn studio at my house, and I built a ramp to get to and a very generous landing outside to get before you get in. I installed an outswing door, and then as I was installing it, I said, should this be an outswing or an inswing? And then I thought, well, okay, well then, if it's an inswing, when you're on the inside, then you've got the problem on the inside. Is there like a standard way of designers thinking about this that, you know, that makes more sense than what I just did?
I think you're absolutely right to be asking that question. Every assumption that we have about how houses need to be, I think are fertile ground for challenging. Just for example, on the door swing, we think about where is a person going to, if they're in a wheelchair or mobility device of some sort, where are they going to be sitting when the door's opening? Mm-hmm. So there should be some space beside the door opening that you can kind of back up and get yourself out of the direction of the swing. And so that often means that there's somewhere from 12 to perhaps 36 inches beside the beside the latch side of the door that should be clear. So that's one principle. Another one is, you think about a bathroom, for example. If a person falls down inside the bathroom and the door swings inward, then if help comes, they can't open the door. The person is lying there.
So I think it's
really worth looking at each room and thinking, what's going to work best for this situation?
I'm thinking pocket door.
Pocket doors are a great idea.
Yeah. We did that
and sliding doors.
When we remodeled our downstairs bathroom, we put in pocket door, and I have to say it was my husband's idea, not mine. But boy, what a difference that made in that small bathroom with that space.
But then you get into the latches or the pulls. I mean, on pocket doors, many of the latches or pulls are really hard to pull out, even with my almost nimble fingers.
We're talking with Deb Pierce and Ro Osborne about the accessible home. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@wgbh.org. Another thing I guess think about is keeping spaces flexible so that they can change as your needs change. So again, thinking ahead to if you're remodeling now, what might this mean to you down the line in the future, right?
Right. There's a house in the book for a woman who's aging at home, and she has several multi-use rooms. The library is also a guest room. The study is also an art studio. The downstairs, she's got an elevator, and the example that you gave of the elevator that's got a little chair and looks like a room is in this house.
Yep.
And so that people come in the first floor, and there's some little waiting room area, which can be used as a living room. It's a nice, quiet place to sit down and read. If she's waiting for somebody to come, or she's waiting for the rain to stop so she can go back out and work in her garden. So there's some spaces on the first floor. The main living spaces are on the second floor. And so she's got these multi-use rooms, and I think that's one of the one of the good ways of planning for the for our needs as they change. Mm-hmm. Certainly, thinking also about a guest suite, maybe that's mm-hmm. a place that a caregiver can live in the future,
right.
Or that if a person were not able to get around very much, they might be in that caregiver suite themselves. So there are several houses in the book that have a little separate guest/caregiver yeah. area that can be used by anybody.
Another thing to think about is maintenance, and I guess, you know, none of us really like a lot of maintenance, but we don't think about that when we're making some changes. I had an uncle who had a vacation home, and I thought this was brilliant. He had a ski house. They did, you know, they had the wood, so they never had to paint. There was no paint in the house anywhere. So he never had to.
Wonderful.
Never had to think about painting. You know what? That was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thinking about maintenance and how much you're willing to do, and, you know, that's another thing you want to think about, right?
Yeah. And similarly, if think about someone's got my mother had a walker, and she had oxygen, and so she was banging into the walls, and it's a nice thing to put a wooden wainscot, maybe beadboard or paneling in that area the first couple of feet, maybe with a chair rail on top of it. So that's something that looks like a nice decorative feature. It gives it a kind of colonial New England flair, but it's also totally functional.
Right.
And low maintenance.
Yeah, lighting key. This is something that as we get older, we need more lighting. So that can be what, bigger windows, adding light fixtures. I mean, so you got to think about lighting as well.
Right, lighting is a big part of it. So, interestingly, for someone who can't hear very well, lighting is important because it allows them to lip read and to see who's speaking mm-hmm. and in a group conversation to be able to kind of visually follow the conversation. And for someone who can't see very well, lighting makes it easier, good lighting makes it easier to see, say, the dials on the microwave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Non-glare lighting, that's a big feature. And also we think about where the light fixtures are placed. So when we put light fixtures in the ceiling, someone needs to stand on a chair to change the light bulbs. If we can use wall sconces, then I think we're making a more user-friendly home.
That's really smart, yeah.
What about some ways we can make our homes more accessible that don't require major renovations? Improving light would be one of them.
Surely. Thinking about lights... electric outlets, you want to have the outlets where the wire is not trailing on the floor and creating a tripping hazard. Think about flooring materials. You don't want it to be slippery and skidding. Mm-hmm. So if there are carpets that they're low pile, that they're dense, that they're secured around the edges rather than an area rug, for instance, mm-hmm. You can put grab bars in or some kind of safety handles in the bathroom. Interestingly, grab bars are kind of the visual symbol of maybe an institutional mm-hmm. home that people think of when they think about accessibility, and it's one of the reasons that there's a resistance. But young people are the ones that fall the most around the tub and shower, and it's by getting out of those yep. areas when they're wet and slippery and soapy.
Yeah.
And so I think just the whole aesthetic of safety handles where they're needed right. is something that's really important to do. If you've got, as Mindy, you were talking about having little steps in your house.
Yeah.
Well, every time you're more you're likely to lose your balance where maybe you're standing on one foot because you're putting on your boot. You know, think mm-hmm. about putting some kind of a low wall or mm-hmm. a handrail
right.
that a person can grab onto.
And just reducing clutter all around, I guess, is another thing.
We got yes.
I want to get this email in.
Good storage.
Yeah, from Cheryl in Sandwich. She says she has a 10-year-old boy with a disability. She says, we have a multi-level Cape-style home that we are slowly renovating to fit his needs. His disability is progressive, so his needs are changing as time moves on. It's difficult to anticipate what we'll need in the future. Is there a section on standards that make the most sense for building ramps, door frames, etc.? Can you think of things specific to children that we should consider? Also, we just purchased a chair/stairlift, and it gets in the way of the front door opening fully and people stepping into the room. Is there anything we could have done differently to avoid this? And a cape, you walk in and see the staircase immediately.
Well, I wonder if you could just change the swing on your door. That might mm-hmm. make it easier.
Yeah.
There's a section in the book, several houses are children-centered homes where the children have spina bifida or cerebral palsy. So I think there are You think about all of us can anticipate what's going to happen in the future. So living is, in fact, a progressive condition. Mm-hmm. But the more that you can do that makes it easier for a variety of conditions, the better it's going to be for this child and for this family. Mm-hmm. It's also important with a family to think about the needs of the whole family. So the caregivers, the siblings, the more independent the siblings can be, the more time the parents have to be with a child that needs extra help.
Right.
And then thinking of the kinds of activities that the child can do so that they can participate as a full member of the family, maybe creating a laundry area that's accessible so this child can really feel that they're contributing. And then also we're looking at, you know, the full spectrum of home needs from the mudroom, the entrance, the say a homework center, mm-hmm. an eating area. The child wants to be able to help with cooking, then you make an accessible workspace in the kitchen. So it's important to just really look at the needs of that particular family and say, what would you like to be able to do in this house, and how can we make that happen?
Yeah, I think it's important to think through, to really like sit down before you just jump into a renovation for like the next level or whatever. Just think through how this is going to affect the entire home, the entire family over the course of time. And I think, like as you mentioned, with the outswing door and the front door, mm-hmm. so that it doesn't get in the way of the chairlift. I mean, that would be one of the things. You go and sit down with the builder and go, well, if we put the chairlift in, okay, now the door is going to be a problem. So we should think that through as well. A lot of this thought will eliminate duplicating work or having work that needs to be torn out in the future as the needs change.
You're right. It's especially important when there's a disability to do it right the first time, because it's so disruptive to have to live around a construction project.
This time has flown by. I see a follow-up to this program coming.
No.
I do want to mention, though, that the National Association of Home Builders, in partnership with AARP, now offers a course to teach builders the technical and marketing skills to become certified aging-in-place specialists, commonly referred to as CAPS. And, Deb, I know you're CAPS certified, and there are other CAPS. So we'll have to have a follow-up here, because there's so much we didn't get to. Deborah Pierce.
I'd be glad to.
Yeah, Deborah Pierce is the author of The Accessible Home, also joining us, Ro Osborne, building trade specialist. Thank you both so much for being
here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Step.
Thanks. And also thanks, Ro.
Thanks
to Margaret Carsley and Alan Mattis for production assistance in Boston. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. Amy Vince produces The Point. Mindy Todd is executive producer. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.